The Drive with Robin Roz. Weekdays, 4 to 7. Jacaranda FM.
October is Men's Mental Health Month, and part of what we're doing in terms of safe space on The Drive with Robin Roz is we're having conversations with people who've been in unique scenarios and been through a lot of things. And it's a great pleasure this afternoon to welcome a man I'm a huge fan of to the studio. Ern Kumane, welcome.
Rob, afternoon. Thanks for inviting me. I think it's good to be here. I think radio studio is a bit different from TV. It's good to see live traffic out there. So this is real. This is proper real. This is it.
No second takes around here. And I wanted to talk about a lot of things this afternoon, but the journey from being young and having a dream, having that dream come true to some level, what it takes to get there, and then what happens when the party stops, quote unquote. So let me start by asking you, the kind of pressure that you get put under as a young man trying to find yourself and your adulthood, but you're in this environment where boys are boys and the pressure is high and the country is watching. Do you think there's a way that people who haven't been in that situation can relate to how much pressure that is?
Yeah, I think we all go through pressure. I think my time was maybe slightly a different era. And quickly touching on it, Rob, I think I was very fortunate I had a family support. I think that's key. So let's extend it further. Community support is key. And I come from an era where when rugby started, when I'm in my early teens, rugby wasn't professional. Then 95 happened.
Yeah.
So when that transition happened from club rugby turning pro, you used to make good money club rugby, by the way. Forget professional rugby. You know, as a student, it was, there are times when guys would rather play club rugby in Joburg than go play for Transvaal B team at the time. You made more money playing club rugby. That's how crazy it was.
Yeah.
Only the first team guys would get their kufirkis, which were slightly thicker. You know, there was no EFT back in the day. Came in a kufirki. Came in a little envelope after the game. So great times, though. So everybody's got a dream. And I think kids, I mean, I've got kids of my own now. I think the pressure's a lot different now. When I look back in my journey, it was always being reminded, especially what was around us from born and bred in Soweto, so from sports people, football-wise, musicians, the day comes. So I was always prepared. There will come a time when the party is over, as you said.
Yeah.
And I say it now, even in what I do now in the TV space, and I suppose it goes for you guys as well in the art space. We're all in a conveyor belt. And somewhere along the line, we have to get off.
Yeah.
And the beauty about that is we set the standards. And the reality is the younger ones will do better because from where they're picking up from, they'll be standing on top of our shoulders. That's the reality of it. So, going back in terms of trying to achieve your dreams and realizing that one day pro sport won't be around. So I was slightly fortunate because we come from that, you got to go to school, you got to study, you got to do this, you got to do that. I got a whole conversation in theory about that, by the way. No. I mean, quick curveball. I feel for a lot of African parents, they live their dreams through us as kids, as in go to study, do this, do that.
Yeah.
And a result of that, a lot of black businesses failed because parents actually frowned on their kids taking over their businesses. That's why those puzzle shops are the way they are now. Because when I grew up, they're all owned by black families. But it was like, rather go work for IBM at the time, rather go work for Standard Bank. And then my son is a doctor, my son is this. Never came back to the family business. But we're not there. So that's just another, just the way I see my viewpoint on life and how things have turned over the years. So I think to answer your question, support is key. You're going to be part of a community.
And do you think enough young people in the professional sort of sporting environment have that? Do you see people struggle when they come out the other end?
They will struggle because we got a false sense of community. We feel community is in our hands, which is a phone. I can be in a bubble without chatting to any human, without talking to anybody. And I'm online, on social media, and I feel I can interact. But it's not real, guys.
Mm.
That's the reality of it. It's not real. You know, you need somebody who's going to be honest with you. When you've done well, they say you've done. When you've done badly, they call you out. And I was very fortunate. My dad was one of those old school guys, you know. When I was on the right track, he wouldn't say much. He'll like smile, but then, you know. But when I was not on the right track, I knew. I knew. So, and my mom was very supportive. I mean, I small things. So I enjoyed football growing up in Soweto. I played football, everybody else. So when they started introducing cricket, the mini Baker's mini cricket with Ali Bacha back in the day, I think it was 1986. And I think it was a year just before I went to St. John's in primary school. And my mom says, no, but you're into sports, so you've got to go, you've got to go. And my school in the township was not part of the zone. So my mom was the headmistress. Like, no, but tomorrow you're coming with me. You're a sports guy. And, yeah, so very supportive mother in terms of sport, cricket. I mean, even when I'd finished playing rugby, she was like, okay, what are you going to do now? And a friend of his husband used to play golf, and he was too old and got injured. He's like, Mr. So-and-so's got a golf club. Must I get them for you? He says, you need to do something. You know, so I was very fortunate. Even then, I mean, I take it back to going to a private school in Joburg, but living in Soweto, the prep school at the time, when the uprising happened. So there'd be guys who'd wait for me. I mean, Usipo is still around. He's an old guy now. Sipo was his name. And he would go... They'll split up in different taxi zones where, okay, if he caught a taxi going this way, he'd be here and he'd be there. So a sense of community, like, okay, this one plays cricket. He goes to a white school. We like him when he plays soccer for us because we've got to make sure this kid is okay.
Yeah.
So there was that sense of community whereby you couldn't afford to drop the ball as such.
Yeah.
Small thing. I mean, when I talk community. So now it's called MTN Taxi Rank. So back in my day, it was not Taxi Rank. On a Saturday, if I had my cricket bag, I never queued. They saw me from a mile, like, you come here. And the taxi marshals used to make sure I get on the taxi first. You know, it was a weird thing. So the sense of community was there. Even, I mean, I'll never say who these guys are today. But when they saw me, it's like, come.
Yeah.
And quickly, I'm in the first one in the taxi to make sure I can make it in time for the game to kick off. So that's a sense of community. And we don't have that anymore. We've got this false one.
In your phone.
Online.
And that can turn on you so quickly as well, you know?
Double-sided sword.
I mean,
that's why I enjoy being old school, you know? They kind of get away. I kind of get away with it at work when they say tweet, and I look at them, I'm like, mm-mm. We're going to have a conversation, and that's it. And I battle with that space, because I see a lot of faceless people. So I'm the kind of guy, I know I don't have all the answers. So Robbie, if I would disagree on something, I'm happy to have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And especially at my age, where, Roz, I need to take a step back because there's a lot of young guys. And as much as I know what it takes to get somewhere, we need to take a step back and allow them to have their peace and also acknowledge how they see the world, to meet them halfway. So especially when you're in a management position and a lot of younger subordinates and try not to press them down all the time. Mm. You know, and again, step back and just see it their way. And it's amazing when you find the middle road, it's just something brilliant, you know. You find the chirps, how they speak, because they speak different to us, you know. I mean, I'm like, nah, like, cool. And be like, and these kids are, it's cold and it's this and all sorts of, it's sick and all sorts of things like that. So we learn as we go as well. But, coming from a very competitive sporting background, still today, some of the weirdest things is it used to happen off season. That first Saturday off, you don't know what to do with yourself. Mm. It's like, have I done something wrong? Am I supposed to be somewhere? There's a timetable. What's going on?
Yeah.
So you panic till about lunchtime. It's like, no, but I'm off.
I can relax.
Yeah. So, but even, you know, some of my peers, I've seen guys struggling to fit into normal society, you know, where they'd walk into a place and they'll get the attention, and tomorrow it's not your day. It's not your crowd.
Yeah.
And you've got to be at peace with it.
It must be incredibly weird because you spend so much time focusing on that thing and then you play a little less and you get picked a little less. And then at some point you're like, I'm going to put my hand up and say, I'm done here. And then where you had the team to go to and you had gym and you had nutritionists and you had everything to do and the coach would be on the phone and you'd be wondering about what's happening the next weekend, and suddenly you wake up on Monday and there's this big empty life in front of you and you have to fill it, and that must be terrifying.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when I stopped playing, realizing the injuries and this happened, I refused to go to gym because gym was work. Mm. You know, for the first 2-3 years, I think I picked up a good 25 kilograms. and everybody's happy. Oh, big guy, big guy. And you know, it's interesting when you pick up weight, everybody's happy with you. When it goes the other way, it's like, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm like, well, I've got two daughters. I've got to still be able to run, you know? I've got to catch a few guys in the next couple of years. So, as I said, you know, mine's slightly different. We come from an era where we knew that rugby was not professional. Then it turned pro. A lot of guys cleaned up, but I think guys today are making a lot more. You can actually quantify, say it's a profession. But also, I think we've seen that within a generation, only one or two can really make it happen and say, I've made enough of a living through rugby or through sport.
Yeah.
There's only one or two in all sports. You know, there's only one or two guys. Somewhere along the line, you need to get into normal society. And I mean, if there's a lot of young guys there who are listening, parents, pass on the message, young professionals, we get invited to these dinners. We frown on it. It's a cultural thing. Why are we going
there? It's not cool.
But the problem is that's where you got to learn to network.
Yeah.
And that's where the guys got to make sure when you got to host a table, be friendly, be kind. Don't be out of character. You know, cause,
don't be fake
because it's always easy to repeat who you are than a performance, but be willing. And the phone calls comes. I mean, guys, I meet an old man through golf, the BCX Super Sport Shootout, slightly old African guy. We meet, I greet him. Hi, we see him there. All these old timers sat with him on the plane back. And nothing happens, but we have a good conversation. It comes from Soweto, fair enough. Fast forward 3 years, I'm in my other business. I'm in the auto body space. I get a phone call. It's like, hey, boss, I understand you're here. I'm like, yeah, how did you get here? Now, all of a sudden, based on the way you carried yourself the last two, three times I've seen you at this, I'm very happy to have a conversation with you. As in, where to? What can we do? And this is an old man who's been around the mill, you know, be having him on his phone. Sometimes I get shocked. I'm like, I've got this guy. You know what I mean? And open to say, what do you need advice with?
Yeah.
And it's just purely based on just being kind, being present. So that's another thing for the younger guys out there. You're going to get that request to go to the mall and sign something, get a request. You got to do this clinic. Open your heart, open your arms. You never know who's watching.
Yeah.
You never know who's watching.
I can imagine, because it's such a necessary thing in terms of looking after this thing that comes next in your life. And I imagine while you're there, there must be huge pressure to keep up with your mates and to show off and the cars and the lifestyle. There has to be some sort of pressure to look a certain way and act a certain way and be cool in a certain way that often you hear in the news and so on, must be so financially damaging to people.
I think I'm wired differently. I think I was dropped as a kid in my head or something. I see the reverse, and that's where sometimes sports guys get it wrong. You always watch the peers that you go to school with, your mates. So you'll make money a lot earlier than them, but they'll make money longer than you. So when you get to your peak in their 30s, they're starting to hit the executive level, the 4 million, 5 million bonuses, and they're going to do that for the next 20 years. Mm. You're in a downhill spiral at the time. So I picked it up early as well. I was like, oh, okay, look at this guy. He's still a student. Okay, I can buy the beers now. Well, the drinks, sorry. I know it's a family show. But either or. So, and I was very lucky, guys. I was very lucky. I had friends who were honest with me. And I never had groupies around me. I've also got that look. I've got that look, you know. And then as soon as you know me, he's like, forget that guy. He's the softest guy. I don't even call him. He's, you know. So, I mean, to the guys out there who've got to perform, not only in sports, but in whatever it is, small business, you're starting up, your first ones, you're not going to make money. You're not going to make money every month. You know, you got to start a business, you're going to lose. But you got to be able to get up the next day. For sports guys, where everything gets done for you, which is a reality from dropping off your passport to now to apply for a visa. You drop off your passport and that's all you worry about. The only thing you got to remember is to just bring your underwear. No, genuinely, that's how it is.
No,
you know?
It's true.
There's some guys who are so bad that when you reach a destination, they've got a hand in their passport. And now we expect this guy to make a decision under pressure in the 87th minute. How? If he can't look after his own passport. So things like that. And they've got their reasons, management, in terms of why they do it, maybe to not to distract the guys. But guys who are sports people, you got to make conscious effort to fit with a normal society, because the day does come.
Yeah.
Not all of us are going to end up in TV. Not all of us are going to end up as coaches. You know, some of us, you're just going to put it behind you and once in a while over a dinner table say, oh, I was a great rugby player.
Yeah.
Or I was a great cricketer. I was a great soccer player. Those days are going to come and you're going to enjoy it and realize it's part of your life. And sadly, you know, our careers end when the other guys are taking off, when our peers that went to school are taking off. But it's better now as well where guys have got options. It's up to the kids themselves. With the Varsity Cup, you know, almost pressed to study. But even the studying setup, you know, not all of us are going to be. I mean, I drive. I was at Ellis Park. So, I mean, Ellis Park was our home. And there's a electrical or some sort of technical. You know, I said, yes, imagine if somebody just pulled me by the ear. I said, boss, you're off on a Wednesday. Come learn to be a plumber. I'll have 1,000 vans around Joburg and around the country. I'm telling you, Owen Kumana Plumbing. I'm just thinking, you know. So again, not all of us going to end up in suits and ties.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is something that I sometimes feel as South Africans, we as parents as well, we don't pass that information on to our kids in terms of we're not all going to end up in the office.
Yeah.
There's so many ways of making a living. And another thing that we frown on as South Africans, informal trade. It's crazy. The amount of money there is, or people can make a living. It's all cash for starters, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the thing about men, right? And you were talking about your dad told you that your job was to make sure you played.
Yeah.
Somebody else's job to pick you and to put the teams together. Your job was to make sure you played. And that's a very performance-based response. And I feel like men in general feel very performance-judged. Doesn't matter what you're doing, even outside of sport, are you being successful? Are you providing for your family? Are you looking after all of the things that need looking after? It's very outcomes and delivery based. And then you get to the point where you're not playing anymore and suddenly you have to find something else that you can pull value from because your name isn't appearing on the team sheet anymore, so you don't know if you're doing a good job. And suddenly there's a space there where you have to sort of find out something about yourself and about where you feel like you're adding value outside of what other people can see as the value. Does that make sense? It's a difficult space for men to navigate, I think, isn't finding their sense of self-worth outside of an outcome.
Taking it back from my generation, what I witnessed, what I saw, there's never been a safe space for men. There's never been one. You know, maybe we need to formalize everything so people can understand. So I tried something with a few of my friends, but nobody got it. And again, it goes back to the safe space, where every year I put my goals down and I give them to Rob. Rob puts his goals down, give it to Ross. And my brother's keeper, well, it was a brother-sister's keeper. Because sometimes you're fearful of making that phone call. But when I look at us, I put, oh, you could do this. It's like in your sleep. But for some reason, I'm doubting myself. But somebody watching from the outside could say, boss, don't forget to phone Rob. So what are you doing? Let's have a coffee. Like, let's phone Rob. I'm here. And Rob could the one changes, who could change your life. And you're just so fearful because you might get rejected or whatever the story is.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to get it. And again, because it's outcome-based, you're all the same peers, and one feels, oh, Owen has done better, and I feel, no, but John's done better than me. And then socially, where are we? So that all those things could get in the way. So we got to take it back to where do people spend most of their time? Is it at work? Should the safe spaces be there? But again, it's competitive. It's a tough conversation. I don't think it's one we can have over one day or over a month.
No.
So it's got to be continuous. It's got to be continuous where, without judgment, you know, you can turn around and say, guys, you know, I'm battling. I've got no coffee in my house. I've got no bread and milk. And all my neighbors, yeah, may his soul rest in peace. Eugene was the only guy I could go up to him and say, I was never in a situation where I needed, thank God. But I only had one neighbor. I said, this is a guy. This oak is solid. I could say to him, listen, boss, I'm battling with a bit of sugar. How are you looking? One oak. You know, but But anyway, so I mean that's sad as well, because when you compare how neighborhoods were before, you know, even in the suburbs, even in the townships, we knew each other's communities, but not anymore. Mm. You see in the school drop-offs in the morning, you know, the car park brigade, there's a click here and a click there. Those run the school, those don't quite. They're waiting for that turn. So again, we've become very clicky as a society, too competitive.
Yeah, it's very binary. Mm. If you win, somebody else has to lose. You can't both win, which is a very exhausting, emotionally draining, mentally combative space to spend your life in. It's tiring, man. Do you think there's enough space for us to be honest?
No. No. So the smaller your circle, the more honest you can be.
So maybe it is just the one Eugene that we all need, that we can go, listen, I'm struggling. And that can be enough if you know that that's the genuine guy that you can go to and offload and say you need sugar or whatever.
Rob Ross, I mean, as I said, I come from an era whereby we've got to man up. You know, up to today, people say to me, how are you? I'm like, well, what choice do I have? What choice do I have? I don't have a plan B. I've got no one to phone. Some people do have. And I say to them, if you've got somebody, please use them. At the moment, I don't. Yeah, I've got a wife, I've got kids. But as a guy, again, you can only say so much to your wife. And we come from that era. Mm. You know, I share enough. Do I share all? No.
I think that's why we have these conversations.
No.
During this month. So that we can sit and chew on that feeling of do I and should I? And what would happen if I did?
Do you think you are that one person for somebody?
For a lot of people. For a lot of people. Each one teach one. I can't be the only one, okay? I think it's incorrect. And it baffles me sometimes when nobody wants to pass on information. I mean, the first thing I said, the younger ones will always be better than us. And the reason for that, because they'll be standing on our shoulders. And with everything they do, they'll be taking, you know, we're taking off from where we left off. You know, where we, like any record, you know, you pick it up in the 80s, 70s, it's much better now. Yeah, but 128, 129 test matches. And if you said that to Nas Poor, you'd be like, you are mad. It's impossible. You know what I mean? At this time, it's impossible. But the reality is someone is going to better that. Someone is going to better. It's just the way life works. That conveyor belt again. Mm. We get on. Some stay on longer than others. But we're going to get off. And somebody else's name is going to be there.
And it's who you are as a person that helps you get through what comes next.
Oh, man, you got to be able to sleep at night. And I always say it, and I don't plan it. I mean, even when I sign off sometimes when I'm working on TV, I always say, stay present, be kind. From where, I don't know. It's just how I feel at the time.
Owen, thank you. We appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks for having... What is a difficult conversation?
No, it's not a difficult conversation, but there's, you know, some great questions you raise in terms of where do we find our safe space as men. When we talk men, it's not a color thing in South Africa. It's all of us got our issues, you know. So yeah, in your communities, find your people. Let's just break out the silence. I need to find my people as well, so I'm not perfect.
Owen, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you.